welcome to the 169th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thank you for listening. So it's warm down here in Southwest Florida. We're finally getting a little bit of rain. My Ironman training is going as scheduled. So far, I'm on week three of my 3 days a week weight training. So it's finally kicking in, as my coach said it would, that I wouldn't be quite so sore afterwards and be able to get my runs and rides in without a whole lot of difficulty. And I'm actually feeling stronger and lifting a little bit more weight. So that's all good. Makes me happier. It's kind of funny. My coach is my son-in-law, who is a Division I strength coach. So yes, he knows what he's doing. I made a joke with him. I said, are you sure you know how to handle a 55-year-old female athlete? But he assured me that everything would be okay. Just have some faith, and I have, and I do trust him immensely. But I think sometimes, we get afraid as far as, are we going to get injured? Certainly, I've been injured in the past doing various things on my own, and don't want to have to take time out from my training schedule to get better from the injuries. And obviously the idea behind strength training is so that you don't get injured doing your other activities. But it is a balance. And, I'm my own coach as far as the other Ironman athletes go to. So, I have a tendency to maybe push myself to try to keep up with maybe people that are significantly younger when it comes to training volume sometimes. So I can get myself into my own bit of trouble. I don't actually need Nathan, nor should I blame Nathan if I were to get into some sort of injury. He's trying to keep me from doing that. But, you get into this idea that you could get hurt, so maybe you should take rest days or you should not do things. And it kind of finally hit me the other day. We're having a squat challenge in the practice. And so we wrote out a sequence of squats. And it can be just air squats, or they can be squats with weight, however people want to do them. When we started a progression, mainly with the air squats, in a beginner and an advanced level, the number of squats increase, and it's going to culminate in 200 squats the last day of the month. And we want people to post that they're, doing their squats on our private Facebook page. And one of the reasons for doing it is to, have a little friendly competition and get people involved, in the group, kind of cheer each other on. And the interesting thing that has happened is that virtually no man has posted that he's doing squats. I know some of them are. I know many of them are not. Some may feel it's beneath them. But that has triggered me as funny. So they in no way are helping to cheer things on. And a lot of people that have their own regimens going on that go to the gym a couple days a week are afraid of the squats for fear that they might get injured. Not perhaps unlike me being afraid of adding weight training in and getting too much. Others are afraid to even begin squats for fear that they've had knee problems in the past. So it's amazing. We come back and we say, can you sit down? Because sitting down in a controlled fashion and standing up in a controlled fashion is the basic form of a squat. That we're squatting to sit, squatting to stand. It's not perhaps a full deep squat, but it is certainly a means to start. And it's a way for people to start to gain strength. So even if they did it before breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it would certainly be helpful to them. But again, people are afraid to add in anything that's a little bit different or afraid to start. And, I take it, one step further in that if we look at people that have really physical jobs, they don't take days off because they lifted the day before or the day after. It's just part of the job, and they get used to it, and their body adapts. I remember my dad used to, handle 500-gallon barrels of oil. It wasn't, I've done this, 2 days in a row. I'm not going to do it the third day. People that you know, have landscaping jobs and gardening and field, you know, and farming jobs, they don't take off from lifting. It's more of us people who have desk jobs or aren't moving on a daily basis or, you know, mainly maybe have a few aches and pains and don't want to, you know, afraid to push the envelope a little bit, but that are afraid to do things. So, you know, I think that, you know, we kind of joke around a little bit, fear of the squat, fear of trying something different, fear of perhaps being a little bit sore. It's kind of all between our ears, and that we just need to start and do it, and our bodies will actually adapt. I mean, if you're injured, it's one thing, but, you know, the difference between being injured and having soreness is a big thing. So, you know, my take home for all this is, you know, don't be afraid to, you know, move every day for fear that you'll get sore. It's what we were designed to do. And so that being said, I'm not afraid to do my weights 3 days a week and continue my other schedules. It certainly, you know, taking adequate rest as far as getting recovering from each of my workouts. But, you know, when you're doing triathlon type workouts, swim, bike, run, weights, it's all different. So you're moving different muscles every day, so those other muscles get a chance to recover. You know, so I would suggest anybody else that are doing things, you know, if you do something different on the other days, it's a way to recover. Or just do a different volume. I think sometimes we try to do every day hard, and that ends up being a road to injury, or we do that gray zone when it's not hard and it's not easy, and we kind of stagnate a little bit. So don't be afraid to have some really easy days, and mostly easy days, and then put in some few hard days and mix it up. But don't shy away from doing something. So anyway, so that's pretty much my plan right now. We're in week three of the buildup, and it's going well. As far as for the backyard garden, you know, we're still doing landscaping projects for trees, but, you know, nothing much grows in Florida except, you know, tomatoes and peppers in the tower garden and some lettuces. I am enjoying the tower garden. I'm becoming a tower garden troubleshooter. I didn't realize that so many roots could grow in a tower garden. I didn't realize that roots could go into the pump that pumps the water. So I'm learning to be a bit of a mechanic there. It's all good. Along that same line, there was a study published in the Journal of American Medical Association, the psychiatry volume, that looked at a retrospective. So it looked back in time, and it looked back at cardiovascular fitness in middle age associated with depression and cardiovascular mortality. And we know from studies way back that if people have a heart attack and they're depressed, or they suffer from depression, that the prognosis is much worse than those people that aren't depressed or are less stressed about the event and have a better way or support in dealing with their heart attack. But this looked at overall fitness and people that were, and they looked at the fitness based on a treadmill exercise test that people had, and they put them into high levels of fitness, middle levels, and lower levels of fitness depending on their functional capacity on this very specific stress test. And what they found was that people that have high levels of fitness have a 16% lower risk of depression. They have a 61% lower risk from death from cardiovascular disease. If adults were over 65 and they were not depressed, they were less likely to be depressed later on in life if they were fit, compared to those with a low levels of fitness. And these people came from, if you've ever heard from the Cooper Clinic in Texas. So this was a large group of, a huge group of people that they followed over many years. There were 17,808 patients reviewed. And, you know, again, the number of people that became depressed in the high fitness group was much lower than in the lowest fitness. It was 22 people in the high per 1,000 years of life, 26 in the median, and 30.7 people per 1,000 years in the low fitness group. And then when they looked at cardiovascular mortality, again, there were 3.9 deaths per 1,000 years in the high fitness versus 10.4 deaths per 1,000 years in the low fitness. It held true if people carried a diagnosis of depression, their mortality was much greater if they had a low level of overall fitness. So again, what you do in midlife affects down the road. And certainly people that tend to exercise and be of that mindset tend to do better, not only from a cardiovascular standpoint, but from a depression standpoint. And we know that there's a tremendous amount of data as well regarding exercise as a means to treat depression. And so if you suffer from depression, it's kind of a chicken and the egg type of thing. It's if you don't feel well, it's hard to get out and exercise, and that's a real dilemma. And that's where it comes starting a routine where you can just get outside for five minutes every day. Pick a time that's going to be convenient that you can do it every day. And typically that's morning. So if you start and get an exercise pattern, 5 to 10 minutes, I'll have people walk out 5 minutes, back 5 minutes, and then the next week increase it to walk out 10 minutes, back 10 minutes, depending on how they're doing. And it gets you into a schedule and in a routine, and next thing you know, people can get a lot of stress relief just by walking. There was another interesting thing that I recently read about in a book called Radical Remission. It's by Dr. Turner. And I'll put it in the show notes, but she interviewed people that had a radical remission after terminal cancer diagnoses. And there was one gentleman that started walking in the morning, and he noticed that the birds started singing at a particular time. He walked just before sunrise, and it turns out that the birds actually are every day start singing at about 42 minutes. And there's scientific studies to look at this. So about 42 minutes before daybreak, sunrise, and it nobody knows why. It's just consistent. But one of the postulates on some of these scientific studies were that, trees release oxygen. They take sunlight and carbon dioxide and turn it into oxygen. And so when the sun first comes up in the morning, the trees are just starting their photosynthesis and releasing oxygen perhaps from the night before. So, when you get out in the morning, you're actually getting a high oxygen level, as well as, hearing the birds, being in nature. So it's a great way to, get your exercise program started. And I actually love it. I love being out on the road running in the morning when the sun rises. I even like being in the pool when the sun's coming up. It's a beautiful time of the day. And so I'd encourage everybody to get out and do that, not only for your cardiovascular health, your cardiovascular mortality, and your mental state. Often when people come into the office, they're looking for alternative ways to treat their lifestyle diseases, especially now since we've went to a completely membership program. So people are seeking me out because I'm a plant-based physician. My goal is to get people off of their traditional medications and heal them through nutrition and movement. And so a lot of the people have already sought alternative ways of treating disease, and sometimes they come in on bags of supplements because they've went to see a variety of different practitioners and they've read on their own, which is great, but it's so confusing out there that they come in with a bag of medications and a bag of supplements, something to treat everything. And they can be quite expensive. Some of these pills are just as expensive as prescription medication, the vitamins and supplements. And there's no regulation, so no matter where you buy them, there have been studies when they look at the actual contents. It varies from bottle to bottle. It varies from company to company as far as even what's in there. And, of course, nobody has, done much in the way of research with these compared to with prescription medications or in addition to, or how they actually prevent disease. I'm not saying it's right, but it's a tremendous amount of money to put on false hopes sometimes. But actually, there was a study recently published that looked at all the studies that were done on various vitamins that we'll talk about, a U.S. Preventative Task Force review. And they looked at multivitamins, vitamin C, vitamin D, beta-carotene, calcium, selenium, and niacin, and other antioxidants you know, and the niacin and antioxidants associated with statin therapy to see whether there was any benefit in mortality and any benefit from, you know, cardiovascular disease. And in previous studies, they've also shown that, you know, taking individual nutrients by themselves don't work the same as they would if they were in the food itself. For instance, beta-carotene has been shown to increase lung cancer when taken as a supplement form, but we know that beta-carotene and all the other nutrients associated with orange vegetables, sweet potatoes, carrots, green leafy vegetables, actually decrease cancers and decrease the growth of tumors and, of course, improve cardiovascular function. So when they looked at this, multivitamins had absolutely no effect. So, you know, if you're taking a multivitamin, there's just no indication whatsoever that they're going to do anything for you. Same thing holds true for vitamin C, vitamin D, beta-carotenes, calcium, selenium, and actually niacin associated with statins increases morbidity and adverse events. And certainly, you know, certain other mixtures, antioxidants, statins, and niacins actually are worse for people. We know that selenium has increased risk for bleeding on itself, as vitamin E has. So there's, you know, these things taken as supplements aren't doing any good for people. The one area where there was a modest trend toward improvement was with a stroke and folic acid supplement, and there appeared to be about a 20% reduction in stroke for people that took the folic acid studies. Now, before you go out running out to buy folic acid, remember that you get a tremendous amount of folate, which is the usable form, which is the natural form in beans and green leafy vegetables and citrus and beets and cauliflower and corn and broccoli and okra and carrots. So these are all the things we want you to eat from a plant-based diet. So if you're doing that, you're decreasing your risk of a stroke already by nutrients, adding stuff on top, and as this study was, in, you know, these meta-analyses, you know, didn't take into consideration people eating plant-based diets. So, you know, don't run out and get folic acid. Just be happy, pat yourself on the back that you're getting your folate in when you're eating these vegetables. The other thing to beware of is, you know, a lot of times people, you know, we want people that are plant-based to take a sublingual or chewable form of B12. B12 is very important because it comes from bacteria in the dirt, and animals typically eat the dirt and you eat the animal. If you're not eating animals, or if you're eating animals on a feedlot, then you're not going to get the B12 that you need. And B12 is a variety, isn't very important for a variety of functions, including neurological functions and metabolism of various amino acids, including homocysteine. So we want you to take B12. Sometimes people ask, you know, what kind of B12? Should I take the methyl or the cyano form? And probably the methyl is going to be the safest form, especially in people that can have renal insufficiency or kidney issues, and they can actually accumulate cyanide. The other thing is, don't take a B12 that is a B-complex, because you don't need all these other things. And again, we've shown before that some of these other, you can actually become toxic on some of these other B vitamins. So take your B12 by itself. Don't take a B complex thinking more Bs are better than just one B. So don't be confused on that, and don't let people sell you on that. Same way with these I vitamins. You know, if you're eating a well-rounded, colorful, plant-based diet, you're getting more nutrients than you ever would from the I vitamins and supplements. And we know that, you know, sweet potato decreases macular degeneration and decreased blood vessel formation in the eye. You know, again, all the antioxidants are good for what causes the eye problems to start with. You know, nitric oxide producing greens are going to help bring down pressures in the eye if it's not just, it's not structural. So the I vitamins are, you know, which are usually touted as a treatment for macular degeneration, are much better to be replaced with natural foods and whole foods. You can buy a whole lot of sweet potatoes for what you'll pay for a eye vitamin, especially if you get it in a physician's office. You know, sometimes we're just not sure how some of these things work. You know, early on in cholesterol studies, it was shown that, you know, it seemed to be correlated with a low good cholesterol. People had more events. So the whole idea was to get people's good cholesterol, their HDL, to increase. People that exercise tend to have a bit of a higher HDL. So it was like, okay, let's have you exercise. And then there were some studies done suggesting that niacin, which is, again, another B vitamin, might improve the HDL. And we now know that, you know, this, it can be very toxic, especially the slow-release niacin can cause hepatitis and liver damage. And it was actually associated with a increase all-cause mortality in these in the summation of all these meta-studies of 10%. So, you know, and it's even more toxic when it's used with statin therapy, which is how it used to be used. So just, you know, for us trying to target to raise a number or lower a number out of context, it can really lead us down a slippery slope. So just to take, you know, supplements because they might have some benefit or may have been extracted from some vegetable that has a benefit is by no means, does it make it safe. It's also kind of funny when you look at who all these supplements are directed at. They're directed at people on the standard American diet or the Western diet. And, you know, it's the very people that are hanging on to this being a great way to eat. Yet, you know, people are having to take all these supplements. So, you know, again, you know, the funny part about it is the people that are taking the calcium and the vitamin D and the antioxidants are the people that are on these, fad diets and the standard American diets that are sick, and they're looking for health and they're looking for it without having to change their bad habits. I have a lot of people walk into the office with bags of supplements, and not one of them have said, man, I feel great now that I'm taking this bag full of supplements. You know, my energy's good, my joints don't hurt. They're all sick. They're all still sick. They're all taking their other medications besides their supplements, and it's not doing them any good. And, you know, they'll try one after another, and it's not helping. But just, you know, I had a lady that came in, you know, 2 weeks after starting a whole food plant-based diet, and she can't believe how much more energy she has. Joint aches are better. You know, and just an overall sense of well-being. And it happens that quick when you increase the blood flow through natural food. So, you know, if you're on a bunch of vitamins and you're eating the standard American diet and you still feel poorly, it's because they're not working. You know, the whole marketing business is out after life hacks, you know, quick fixes, and, you know, they just really, really don't work. And in the instances of supplements, sometimes they can actually make things worse. So, you know, be wary. Don't jump on the bandwagon just because somebody says, you know, this is the fish oil from the Great Northern Sea from the most pristine fish. It's not. You know, stay away and eat your whole food, plant-based diet. Of course, the next thing that comes up, well, how about the Mediterranean diet? Wasn't that supposed to be great? And, you know, those people eat olive oil, and they did so much better. In June, the New England Journal of Medicine retracted that study because of the inaccuracies associated with it. They found that doctors had not randomized the people correctly. It was supposed to be a randomized trial, yet entire villages were on the same diet. Nobody checked to see what people were actually doing. The people on just the low-fat arm really didn't change their diet at all. The people on the olive oil or the nut arm were given those things by the olive oil and nut industries so that they were more likely to be compliant than the people that were supposed to be eating a low-fat diet, which was really not a low-fat diet. It was about a 40% fat diet, which is the standard American diet. So, you know, there was so many things wrong with that study. And if you looked at the absolute reduction between people, you know, that were skewed towards the nut and olive oil versus people, you know, of the not really doing a low-fat diet, there was a 0.6% reduction in the olive oil portion and a 1% reduction in events in the nut portion. So, and the only statistically significant area was a slightly improved area, a decrease in stroke. So, you know, to say that the Mediterranean diet is a miracle diet, especially given the wide variety of whatever a Mediterranean diet is, it's changed with every study that's done. It's changed with how people recommend it. But everybody jumped on it like it was a miracle study, and people were still having events. You know, it really is amazing that people haven't jumped on to Dr. Esselstyn's study, Dean Ornish's study, where actually there was reversal of disease with heart catheterizations, with PET scans, with the absence of heart attacks or strokes when people maintained on a whole food plant-based diet with no added oil. So, you know, again, we grab on to things that we want to believe in that are easy, not much change, not much effort. But we know that, you know, anytime we want to get big results, we need to put some effort in. And, you know, doing what we want to do because we're adults is not necessarily, you know, the right message to send to either our friends and or our children. It just kind of shows a stubbornness and unwillingness to change, to try to make ourselves better. So the bottom line, and you know, and all these things I've been talking about is, you know, eat your beans, eat your greens. It all comes back to the same thing, that you can get so much benefit by eating these colorful meals. Someone, you know, suggested that I post recipes or, you know, every week. We have a website that has recipes on it, and certainly our members-only website has more recipes and cooking demonstrations on it. So if you'd like to be a part of that and, you know, have recipes given to you on a weekly basis, certainly you can. We do have a newsletter that there are recipes on every month. So if you'd like to subscribe to that, please come over to drdelaney.com, drdelaney, and .com, and we can give you, you know, the monthly newsletter that gives you tips and tricks and recipes. You can also follow me on Instagram. I post a lot of what I eat or what turns out nice on Instagram under Jamila Delaney. So I'm there. Some of the things are posted on Facebook as well, but Instagram is where I post most of the things that I eat. In class this week, we did a carrot cake breakfast cookie, all natural ingredients, pineapple, carrot, raisins, oatmeal, and you know, no added sugars of any kind, and everybody liked it. Somebody asked, you know, well, how many of these are a serving? And the answer was one. Again, we took oats and, you know, wet them with some almond milk and, you know, added the chopped vegetables. So chopped carrots obviously are good for you, but, you know, chopped pineapple and raisins, they're a little bit calorie dense. So when you chop something up or smash it and put it together, you're obviously increasing the calorie density. But I suggested people have, you know, one of those cookies as an alternative to their oatmeal, as long as they're having, you know, the fruits with them. We use flaxseed in them as well. But, you know, I think that that's perfectly fine, a bowl of fruit and one of those cookies as a breakfast or an alternative to oatmeal. I don't think it's an everyday thing, but I think it's a great once in a while. I think it's a reasonable alternative to mix up your breakfasts, especially if you'd like to go the majority of fruit, but you want a little bit of something to chew that's a little bit different. I think it's, you know, the carrot cake breakfast cookie is much better than a processed food or a processed cookie that you would buy. You know, I think we get into trouble with a lot of vegan processed foods that remind us, you know, there was donut day and there's, you know, all kinds of different things that, you know, vegan junk food out there, and people can get really confused that they're healthy. And again, you know, we want to focus on, you know, what you have so many calories that you need a day to maintain your weight and your energy. And, you know, where do you want them to come from? You want them to come from nutrient-dense foods, and you want to eliminate as much of the fluff as you possibly can. If it's not helping you, there's a good chance that it could possibly be hurting you. And I do want to, you know, make sure people are you know, getting their omega-3 fatty acids. I think those are extremely important, especially when the omega-3s and omega-6s compete with enzymes. So to decrease inflammation in your body, you really got to focus on the omega-3s. And, you know, the biggest sources, again, are the flaxseed, hemp seed, chia seeds, kale, all the greens, pinto beans especially, but all the beans. You know, make sure you get those in your diet on a daily basis. The antioxidants from fruits, you know, what's in season. Watermelons are great this time of year. Berries are in season. You know, I shy away from strawberries because of the pesticides. But, you know, mangoes down here, it's my favorite time of the year. I eat a mango every day, at least. And, you know, again, these yellow fruits with beta carotene, vitamin C, and all the electrolytes that you would need. There's no need to take electrolyte drinks. If you're eating fruit, you're getting plenty of them. And as a matter of fact, I took a page out of the Plant Positive, running book, and I've had the Plant Positive people on a few episodes ago, and they, you know, they do a date and banana water to run with. So I did that last Saturday. I took one banana and two dates and spun that in my Vitamix and with water so I could put it in a flask and took it with me on my run, and it actually tasted great. So I'm leaning towards more whole foods even when I'm doing my endurance events. You know, before, you know, when I first started, you use the electrolyte drinks. It started out early on, I used Gatorade, and then I went to, you know, more expensive formulations, which are basically just different formulations of different kinds of sugars and dextrins and you know, artificial flavors. And then I went away from that to water, and then, of course, these gels, which are, again, sugar that you can absorb quickly. And the main reason is because, you know, when it's hot and your stomach is, the blood is going to your muscles and your legs and your arms and not to your stomach, it's hard to digest things. So liquid calories are easier. Obviously, we need sources of sugar. But I'm experimenting more and more with, you know, the things like bananas and dates made into the water. People have done raisin water. And then for bike rides, to do the baby food purees, you know, carrots, beets, sweet potatoes, as a way to get some, you know, kind of the soft, easily digestible food in, perhaps on the bike. Orange slices work really good for me on the run, you know, if I'm running in a race where there's, you know, aid tables. So, you know, I think as long as you can stick to those things, you got a better chance of getting a little bit of nutrients, a little bit of electrolytes in the right combination. So I think I'll leave you with, you know, challenge yourself every day with some activity. Train perhaps for your next adventure. If you have a vacation coming up, you know, start training so that you can walk more and enjoy your vacation more. Do more activities. Find out what activities are available where you're going, so that you can, you know, maybe train specifically for them. If you're going to altitude, you know, start training for hills, even on the treadmill or a stepper or you know, step machines at the gym, or even just stepping up on a bench to help you train for your vacation. Don't bother with the supplements other than a B12 and the methylform. Get your vitamins and minerals and antioxidants from whole fruits and vegetables. Eat the rainbow at every meal. Get your local fruits and enjoy things that are fresh and available. You can do this diet this way of eating very, very cheaply if you eat locally and sustainably. This time of year, visit farmers markets. Take your kids so that they can see the vegetables firsthand. And until next time.